Zach Harper joins us right now, and just to thoroughly enjoy these segments when we can bring in big NBA hitters. Zach, thanks for joining us, Zach, with CBS Sports NBA and, of course, Salt City Hoops, working with Andy B. Larson on a regular basis, Thursday, 7 to 9 p.m. on ESPN 700, our sister station, at Talk Hoops. Zach, thanks for taking a few minutes to kick it around with us here.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
So my first question is, and I'm going to play a little, you heard this, so I'm going to play KD again because I just think his calm, this would scare me if I'm Golden State. Go ahead, John, can you play Durant again?
I mean, what's to celebrate, we didn't win anything, we didn't win the championship, we playing in the Western Conference Finals, we're playing against a great team, we got a W the first game one, but there's a lot of basketball to be played, so we can't be too excited. It was a good win for us, but, we're not going to be jumping up and down, chest bumping on the court. We got a lot more basketball to play.
And then Draymond Green said, we're not panicking, but there will be much more there will be a little bit of desperation tonight from Golden State, and that's not a bad thing. So, Zach, it just strikes me that we're seeing this OKC team maturing right before our eyes, and that's a scary thought.
It is. I mean, they had a lot of things to figure out during the regular season in terms of their rotation, how they were going to stagger, Westbrook and Durant being out at different times, the defense, especially the defense at the end of close games. And it seems to everything, once we hit the, maybe the end of that Dallas series, but really that San Antonio series, everything just clicked for them.
Yep.
And, as much as we over-scrutinize the team, they're crazy talented. I mean, they have two of the five best players in the world. And because of that, you're going to have a huge chance to win, even against the Golden State Warriors, and they just have the right mindset. And it's funny, Durant's comments, everyone gets upset at him for the things he says about the media and everything. He just doesn't like dealing it. All he wants to do is focus on basketball. That's all he wants to do, and everything else is a distraction that takes him away from it. And so when he gets to just focus on basketball, he might be the best player in the world. He might be better than Steph. He might be better than LeBron. And all he wants to do is just focus on winning the series and then winning the next series and finally having that championship so people will stop asking him about getting the championship.
Exactly. I just love the calm, and I love him shooting 30 times. That means it's their right size. When he's shooting 30 and Russell's shooting 21, even if they only shoot 33%, which is another one of those sort of subtle things that happen, like they didn't shoot it well. And they were still, like I said, they kind of controlled the end game. Three things. I think, Steven Adams has been a beast. He's athletic, strong. He's a rock there. And, 16 and 12, he's a regular double-double guy, and he's playing a lot. And then there's Dion Waiters, who has also found his niche on that team. A guy who's, he's bounced around, and he's always seems like he's complaining. He wants touches. Well, he's found a way into this lineup, and like you said, they're clicking, and they have the rotation down. They're sharing it. There's not a lot to pick apart with this team.
No, there really isn't. What I loved about Durant, especially at the end of that game, was he had a tough stretch in the fourth quarter where I think he missed five or six straight shots.
And yeah, I think it was seven.
Seven straight shots. A couple of them were bad looks, but most of them were just in-rhythm shots, and it didn't faze him. He just kept going back to it, and some people would say, oh, he's not hitting, he's got to pass the ball. And I just don't agree. I think this, guys like him, shooters, they have to shoot. And they have to keep shooting. You have to think like, all right, I missed the last one. That has nothing to do with the next shot. And then he hits that big dagger with, 50, 40 seconds left in the game. And that was because he has that supreme confidence. And then to your point about Adams and Waiters, Steven Adams has been the best big man all season long. Like, he has really come into just a fantastic comfort in his role and just beats up the other team's big men, hits the boards, he can finish around the basket.
And I love that pick. I love that pick trip play. When you can swing off the pick and trip, that's great.
that's probably some rugby league stuff that he picked up along the way. And then Dion Waiters, Waiters has been a guy who we just joke about wanting to shoot everything, always calling for the ball, even when better players have it. But he found, a lot of comfort within his role of he's been asked to play really good defense, and he was great defensively in that Spurs series. He was great defensively in game one. And then he's, not trying to do too much on offense, and he's a good enough shooter. When he doesn't try to do too much, he can really be a weapon for them.
And, we've talked for a couple of minutes, and we haven't mentioned Billy Donovan, who the ton of pressure. Scott Brooks was a really good coach and had the ear of both of his big players and, took him a long way. And they reached out to a guy, a rookie head coach, obviously very successful in college, knows what he's doing. But he had to go through his own learning curve as well. But, you know, some might say he outcoached Popovich in that, like me. He made some moves, and, you know, he looked like Pop was chasing him and with his moves. And what has impressed you most about Donovan? I love the way he backs off, and it's all about the players, too.
Oh, yeah. He has a great attitude for complimenting the players and crediting them for executing the game plan. And he's got a great assistant staff and just a great organization to devise the game plan they have. But he's been great. Yeah, I mean, at worst, he coached Popovich to a draw, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe you can say the players took over, but I thought he did a great job. You know, people were killing him for not doubling LaMarcus Aldridge in the last round, and the plan was, hey, if LaMarcus Aldridge is going to score 50, 60 points and beat us, so be it, but we're not going to give him that ball movement. And he took away the ball movement of the Warriors in the second half of that game, which is not easy to do. That is maybe the hardest thing to do in basketball, is take away the passing that they have. And so all the defensive adjustments have been exactly what they needed to correct the problems in the regular season. And, you know, the three wins away from the finals.
I know, it's crazy. And, you know, subtly he took Ibaka off of Aldridge, because I think LaMarcus was, what, 33 for 44 in the two games in Santa Fe. Ridiculous. He put Adams on him. And then with some other changes every once in a while, but that took care of business. And yeah, I like Golden State saying, "Oh, we quit moving the ball and we took quick shots and all these things." Well, some of that was, as you mentioned, OKC playing the passing lanes and seeing how they do stuff. And you know, but at the same time, I think tonight we're going to probably see Steph Curry, aren't we? Isn't it like the Splash Brothers got to be huge tonight?
You would think so. I'm a little worried because he wasn't moving all that well in Game One. He didn't have the quickness, and there was a play in the fourth quarter that kind of symbolized this perfectly, where he got switched with Cantor on him and had an isolation on the left wing with Enes Kanter and couldn't take him. Like, Kanter even gambled for a steal and missed, and that should be a point where that's just an automatic bucket for Steph once he gets that room,
sure.
Especially if it's a slow guy like Kanter. And he couldn't take advantage of it. He ended up having to pass the ball away, and they ended up with a bad three-point shot by Draymond Green. And so without that explosiveness, it's not that Steph Curry's a bad player all of a sudden. It's just they have to adjust some things. They have to figure out a little bit smarter way to attack, because he can't just bail them out. And Klay Thompson had a great first three quarters, and then he was leaning and off balance on open jumpers in the fourth and didn't hit anything. So, yeah, I would expect the Splash Brothers to come back strong in Game Two and, you know, lead them to a victory. But I thought they were going to lead them to a victory in Game One, and that didn't happen.
Right. And just 14 points in the fourth quarter. I mean, they usually get 14 in the first, what, like 3 or 4 minutes. So,
right.
I mean,
maybe the first 4 or 5 possessions.
Exactly.
They get there.
It's crazy what they do. But I also, you know, I like what the TNT guys, that Barkley and Jed and Shaq, talking about, you know, just because, I think it was Barkley who said, just because Golden State goes small doesn't mean you got to go small. And now OKC's punishing them with Kanter and Adams.
Yeah, and that's kind of been the blueprint that I thought was going to be, you know, how you have to play them if you just want to take them down. And I liked it when the Spurs tried it in the regular season. I liked it when the Jazz tried it in the regular season. If you just go big, you make the game a lot slower for them, because you don't want them to dictate the pace, and you try to own the rebounding advantage. And if you can do that, you take them out of the rhythm. If you take them out of the rhythm, then maybe they start rushing and forcing shots. And another great thing the Thunder did defensively is they switched everything. It didn't matter who was switching on to who. You had to take that matchup, and you had to force them off the three-point line. And the Thunder did a great job of executing that. I don't know how sustainable that is, because I think the Warriors are smart enough to kind of counter it as they get a little bit of preparation for it. But that was the way to steal Game One.
Yeah, that's true. This is going to be a quick answer. I mean, the Raptors, are they already done?
Oh, yeah. They were done before that Game One started. I think it's great that they made it to the conference finals and had the best season in history. They're not taking down this Cavs team.
Yeah, I know. Okay, let's focus Jazz again, fourth year in a row, and I think fifth in the last six. They're in the draft lottery, which they don't want to be there. They're going to pick 12th. There are all kinds of possibilities. What's kind of the pulse? What do you get from this team? Just give me sort of your first thoughts whether you want to talk about who they might go first round, or just give me your general thoughts about the Jazz, where they are right now.
Yeah, I think it's a constant reevaluation of the roster and the depth. And, you know, they need wing depth. Rodney Hood emerged this year and it was a great compliment to Gordon Hayward, but they didn't really have a whole lot after him. They had to play a lot of Joe Ingles at the small forward and the stretch four. And I think they just want more depth than that. And part of that was injuries, with everyone going down for significant time. But I think another power forward that can maybe play a couple of positions, maybe another wing can play, you know, 2 through 4 or 1 through 3. I think they're just looking for versatility and looking for depth within that roster, because the starting five, especially when Dante Exum is healthy, is, you know, one of the best defensive units in the league.
Right. Is it time for them to bring in some shooters? I mean, every year we hear about they're going to get shooters, and then, you know, then they go Lyles instead of Booker, and I get that. Trey was good, and, you know, he may end up being long-term the better player. I think Booker has a chance to be a star. We'll see. But don't they need spacers?
Absolutely. Especially if they're going to play big like they do, it just takes away a lot of the space that you can have on offense, and so you need to counter that with having a guy who can just shoot the lights out. And, you know, there are a couple of good shooters in the draft, but, you know, that may be something where you target a guy by a trade, by moving the pick. I'm not convinced they're going to keep the pick, and I think there's going to be a lot of craziness on draft night, and maybe you can get a part of a three-team deal that brings in a veteran shooter that can, you know, stretch the floor a lot better than a number 12 pick would.
That's a great point. I love that, because you don't have to wait for this guy to develop. And I think Jazz fans, you know, this is the most patient market I've ever been in. But at some point, you know, the future has to be now, because you look at what Portland did, and they had to remake their team in 1 year and only 4 games better than the Jazz. But look, they made it to the conference semifinals. I mean, at some point, and obviously they're putting a lot on Exum and hoping that he can be the guy offensively, as, you know, his offense can match up with his defense. But, I expect they'll be involved. They have 3 second-round picks. They're not going to use all of those. So it's going to be fun. There's going to be a lot going on, a lot back and forth. Just curious if you know, what your timetable would be for this team, because at some point, and them along with Portland, the two lowest payrolls in the league, I mean, it's just over 60. So they made some money for the franchise, and they banked some money. And then after next season, everybody's going to have money. And so their advantage in the money category is pretty much this summer.
Yeah, and even then, there's a lot. I think there are about 20 teams with max room or close to max room for a guy. So I don't even know how much of an advantage they have this summer with spending money, and you probably have to use a lot of that in a trade rather than signing a free agent, because it's not a destination, and they're not at that point yet. But I think with what they want to do, you know, I think it was fine not to make the playoffs this year. With the injuries and everything, I think it was fine. They're still in the development phase, but going into next season, the playoffs have to be the goal. You can't have the slow play anymore. You can't have the slow development anymore. The playoffs have to absolutely be the goal. Because the Western Conference looks a little down. Like, maybe the Timberwolves are going to be better. Maybe the Kings will be better under Dave Yeager. You know, maybe the Pelicans will be back on track and not as injured. But this is a team that was good enough when healthy to be the 5 seed like Portland was. And so they have to start marching towards that and aim for 5, 6, 7 rather than just hoping to get 8.
Right. And don't look now, but the Lakers aren't going to be at the bottom very long. I mean, Kobe's gone. They don't have to do that madness anymore. Right. They can actually start to try to compete. Zach Harper with us, CBS Sports NBA, Salt City Hoops locally. That's show Thursday, 7 to 9 p.m. when other things don't preempt, over on ESPN 700. Great follow at Talk Hoops. You know, this is a huge summer for this franchise, and I guess all eyes are on Exum and the summer league, and, you know, whether or not he participates. To me, I'd rather he plays with the Australian team at the Olympics and is able to play a lot. You know, maybe there may be a limits restriction, but I want to see this guy play as much as possible.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know that I don't know you can learn a whole lot in the summer league other than it just helps him get the rust off. It helps him get the confidence back of jumping off that leg and landing on that leg and taking contact. But you're right. Like, if he can play for the Australian team, that's where you're really going to get good, valuable minutes for his development, because it's more high stakes, because it's more physical, because it's better basketball, causes him to raise his game. And I think it's just, you want to get him as much quality basketball time as possible moving into next season so he can get back up to speed. Because even the timing of it, he probably could have come back this year if they wanted to get him back by the end of the season, just with the timing of the injury. But for the most part, you know, there's still about a year and a half of when that injury happened that you have to make up for. And so he probably has another half year to really get his leg under him and get comfort in that. So that's going to bleed into next season, and you want to make sure you can accelerate that process as quickly as possible without really endangering him. And I think the Olympics – really give him a great opportunity to do that.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I'm just curious if you think, I mean, with what's going on in Memphis, you know, they made all those trades. I mean, they gutted the franchise, and then, you know, Gasol goes down and Conley, and then the coach, that was that fiasco. So if you're Conley, isn't this a time where the right offer with the right team, you know, might get you to leave money on the table to leave? And if you're the Jazz, that is a really intriguing pick. Although, you know, he's been hurt a lot lately, last couple of years. But, man, he would check a lot of boxes on this team, and it would allow Exum to, you know, not feel the weight of the franchise like he's going to feel if they don't have anybody else. I mean, it's just the it's just how it is here.
Yeah, I mean, you don't really want him losing minutes to Shelvin Mack and Halimeto over next season. But if
right.
he has to play behind Mike Conley, yeah, that's, I mean, that's really the ideal scenario for him, because there isn't that much pressure. He gets to learn how to be kind of an X factor and a spark plug off the bench and build that confidence against those second units rather than going against guys like Mike Conley every night for, you know, 20, 30 minutes.
Is that realistic?
I don't know if it's realistic. I think it's realistic that he leaves the Grizzlies. I don't know if it's realistic that he comes here, but I think that, you know, I think 4 months ago it was a foregone conclusion that Conley was going to resign. Now, you know, I think it's probably more likely that he doesn't resign.
Right.
And that he does have feelers out there and try to find a better situation. This would be a better situation because it's much more stable. But there are teams like the Spurs who may be reaching out to him. The Mavericks are always looking for a point guard in free agency. I mean, there's some real suitors that can make the money work and give him a great chance to be on a great team.
Yeah, that's a great point. I look at the market changeover in Memphis to Salt Lake. You know, it's similar. It's a mid-major, like a college term. And so in that world, I mean, he's going to be joining a young team. And, you know, I could make a strong case. But you're right. If he's up against, like, a Dallas or San Antonio San Antonio would be another category. But, I mean, I'm just trying to think of guys who could come in and help the Jazz immediately. I'm looking for, like, those veteran stars who will do so much for this team, and I think they need an infusion of talent. Like you mentioned, they need rotation guys. That, you know, they need three or four players, I think. I think they need to kind of gut the rotation and bring in better guys.
Yeah, I agree, and I think that, you know, the foundation's fantastic.
Absolutely.
The foundation is, you know, one of the best young cores in the league, but you do need that experience. You do need to supplement those guys, because if injuries do happen again, you just can't be put in a situation where guys are having to overextend themselves as much as guys had to do it this year. And it's just, you know, sometimes that's the breaks of how the season goes, and sometimes you can help, you know, kind of avoid that by bringing in good players in free agency or trade. You really want to target a veteran voice on this team, just because, you know, this was, what, the second youngest in terms of experience this year and one of the youngest just in terms of age for teams. I mean, I think that maybe was the reason, along with the injuries, that they didn't make the playoffs and they couldn't make that playoff push, because they didn't have that experience. That's something you have to learn. If you can bring in guys to teach that and accelerate that process, you're ahead of the game.
All right, quickly, if you're Danny Ainge, Jamal Murray or Buddy Hield, either way, you're going to get a tremendous scorer and shooter and kind of what the Celtics need.
I would go Jamal Murray. No offense to Buddy Hield, who I think is going to be a great pro, but Jamal Murray can create his shot a lot better, and he's younger, and I just think that he's going to be an incredible player at the next level.
And who wins OKC, Golden State?
I'll go Warriors tonight, and I'll go Warriors in seven, but I don't feel terribly confident in that second one.
We're going to have fun watching it, aren't we?
It's going to be so much fun. I mean, this is maybe the best series the rest of the playoffs.
Yeah, looking forward to it. Okay, Zach, thanks so much. I look forward to checking in with you down the road. Enjoy the games. Again, CBS Sports NBA, Salt City Hoops. Are you guys on tomorrow night?
No, I think we're bumped for the game. So
right, you're bumped for the game. Right, okay. Salt City Hoops and, of course, at Talk Hoops. Matt, Zach, thanks so much. Again, best of luck, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you. Anytime.